This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you been struggling lately? Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, difficulty with a relationship, or just suffering from low self-esteem. If so, then BetterHelp wants to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You get to talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network, and they give you access to help that may not be available in your area. You just need to fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And there's a special offer to Nowhere to Be Found listeners. You'll get 10% off of your first month, but only if you go through the link or type in betterhelp.com/NTBF for Nowhere to Be Found. That's better, HELP.com/NTBF. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And you can find the link in our show notes and on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com. Previously on Nowhere to Be Found.
As far as Michael's concerned, he was raised in a normal middle-class home, a well-rounded, if you will, well-liked young man.
Yeah.
Didn't know a stranger. Michael had his demons that he fought.
Sure.
But the bottom line is Michael's missing. He vanished.
While talking to Tina and Parrish, I can't help but recognize that I am hearing all of Michael. His greatest accomplishments and things people loved about him, but also some of his most intimate struggles and low points in his life. This information is precious and deserves respect. I think Michael's backstory is extremely important, but I want to be clear that his struggles do not define him. He's a loving, empathetic son, brother, and friend, and his mistakes in life do not undermine his disappearance. The Brysons are very brave and truthful people, and I commend and respect them for being able to talk about their son's flaws and struggles, even in this raw and vulnerable state. To me, it only adds to their credibility and shows that they just want to know what happened, even if it doesn't shine Michael in the best light. Because at this point, closure would be a mercy. I'm your host, Amanda Papineau, and this is Nowhere to Be Found.
Before Michael went up there, he texted Natalie, and he told her, "I don't have a good vibe about this party.
No.
Part of me doesn't want to go, like I might run into somebody that I'm not vibing with." Well, I'm getting ahead of myself here. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Let me go back to Michael for a minute.
Sure.
We both got a little emotional for a second. So, going back to school with Michael, I mean, mm-hmm. he did 1 year at NCU, and then he transferred to LBCC/OSU and did the dual enrollment, and that's when we really saw an involvement with marijuana.
Okay.
You know, as far as, you know, just kind of falling away from, if you will, how he was raised, and then when he moved back, he quit school and moved back. And got a job at a restaurant and then a bar. And then he went to another bar. And he was kind of going from one job to another.
Okay.
Well, then he was living in Eugene because he didn't want to live at home. And he got mixed up with a really, really bad crowd. And he started doing meth.
Okay.
And he was involved with meth for about 8 months. And at that point in time, we had to change the locks on our doors, basically tell him, you know, we are not helping you with this habit. You either get clean or you just don't, we're not supporting it, so don't ask for money.
Absolutely.
And that went on. The hardest part was probably about 2.5 months long. Mm. And then at the last 2.5 months, he finally said, okay, I want help. And we were taking him to rehab in California. And by the time we got to Glenwood, we had to pull over. Tina called her brother, who's a Eugene police officer. And he said, "I can be there in 5 minutes. do what you can to stay safe and keep him under control. He called his buddies, and we had about five officers there, and like I said, in about 5 minutes.
Wow.
And we were up at the Glenwood gas station.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled Michael out of the car. And anyway, all of this kind of went down. The officer came and said, you either arrest him or you bury him. He said, I've seen this kind of behavior, and if you don't take control of your son's life, he's not going to have one to live.
Wow.
So at that point, we had him arrested, and we were told, oh, he'll only be in jail for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up being in jail for 22 days. He detoxed in jail.
Oh, boy.
We said, we'll pick you up from jail only if you go straight to rehab. So he went from jail to rehab, and he was in rehab for another 22 days. So he had 45 days of complete sobriety.
And
he
when was this?
I'm sorry?
When was this?
Oh, boy. About 6 years ago?
Oh, okay. Okay.
About 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
So anyway, I was kind of telling you that to kind of give you a background of, you know, where he was at, college to, you know, 22, 23.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so for the last 5 or 6 years, I would say the first 2.5 years, he was clean except for marijuana and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started dabbling again with the ecstasy and the Molly. And then it just grew from there.
Okay.
So his involvement grew back in again. And number one, self-medicating. Number two, just not really feeling where he fits in or how he fits in. Then all of a sudden, like I said, he's gone. And thus brought us to where we're at today.
Okay. So this is where Michael's backstory ends and the events of his disappearance begin. Just as a refresher, Michael was last seen August 5th at a camping birthday party at Hobo Campground.
So I don't know if this thing with Michael at this party was a confrontation, if it was something from the past that wasn't settled. There was some people there that they were muscly, if you want to say that.
Yep. That's something I had thought of is, okay, let's say that there was foul play involved. What would be the reasons that someone would want to do that? And my first thought is, okay, does he owe anybody money? So
exactly.
It sounds like you're going down the exact same road as, you know, maybe
yep.
past issues are coming up, and maybe he hasn't seen that person for a long time, and then
he
shows up at this party. So from my research, which I will say the Let's Find Michael Bryson Facebook page is pretty incredible.
Thank you.
It's kind of amazing. I mean, what are we, almost at 15,000 people?
Yeah.
And it's just this, like you've called it, Michael's army. It's like this army of internet super sleuths have taken it upon themselves, kind of like me, to dive in a little harder than most probably would. And they're just full of information. If you really are reading between the lines and seeing these posts and then, you know, you see somebody post somebody's name, you go to that person's profile. It just kind of unravels this whole thing. Trying to decipher, you know, who are Michael's real friends who really care about him? And then who are these people kind of on the outskirts of this party?
And going back to the attendance, we've had two lists of people.
Okay.
Both lists have about 30 of them on there. So I would tell you that there was probably 45 to 50 that were quote unquote invited.
Okay.
But at any one time after the party got going, by people inviting somebody else or passerby.
Sure.
The locals that saw what was going on stopped by to have a hit of something.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we get the up to 100 people.
Okay. Yeah. And it makes sense. So, I mean, four days long.
Right. And it wasn't like it was, 100 people 24/7. It was the same 100. They were coming and going. And that's where the inconsistencies in the stories come from. So my idea was, okay, you either saw something or you know something, or one of the quote unquote muscle men that was there, they pretty much said, if we talk, you know, we are going to be going to jail, we're going to be, you know, going to prison, or we will make sure you guys go to prison, or you know what happened to Michael? It can happen to you too.
Right.
So somebody has silenced the the people.
But just kind of going back to the timeline here for the day that he went missing, or even the days prior, you know, the story is that him and Ben drive out there kind of late at night to leave 8:30. But what are your thoughts on that? Like, is Ben part of his good group?
Yes.
Okay. So you knew Ben prior to all this happening?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And so, you know, he gets there and we're not sure really what happens that next day, that whole night, the fourth, right? Or
right.
I guess I'm not.
Right.
And then he was scheduled at some point to do another show on Friday.
Correct. At a different place.
Right.
That's why he had his keys and his, because Ben drove, but Michael
right.
left his car at home. So he had his keys so he could get a ride home and get back in his apartment.
Uh-huh.
He had his thumb drive so he could do music at this show on Friday.
Okay.
Just in case he stayed, you know, with longer than what they thought they were doing.
Right.
Because the DJs that were at this party were supposed to be there Monday afternoon to Wednesday afternoon. So that was kind of the plan, was to stay there maybe till Thursday, come home, freshen up, and go to the other one, and or just catch a ride to the other one. But he did tell me when he came in on Monday, he said, "Dad," he says, I'm going to go camping for a couple of days. I'm going to be out of signal, but I would like, I just want you to know that." He says, "But I want to come home and do some more work so I can, you know, make a little more money."
Okay.
So he was planning on coming home, at least to Eugene, to our house, Thursday afternoon,
okay.
if not Friday morning before the other party.
And then you find out Wednesday night.
Correct.
And who called you?
So I got I was at work on Wednesday the 5th,
mm-hmm.
and I got a message from Natalie, who is Michael's ex-girlfriend, and she asked me if I've heard or seen Michael. And I said, no, I saw him on the 3rd of August. He came over to our house. He said that he was going to be out of service for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And then back into service to help Parrish on, I believe, Thursday with yard work.
Okay.
I had sent a text to his phone Tuesday night. And I believe I said, "Hey, bud, what's up?"
Mm-hmm.
And then to not hear from him, that was pretty unusual.
Okay.
At 11:30 the next on Wednesday morning, while I was at work, I texted him and I said, "Hey, are you alive?" And then an hour and a half later, I said, "Michael, this isn't funny. You know, uh-huh. contact me ASAP."
Yep.
Well, then at 5 o'clock. It was Natalie that texted me asking me if I had heard from him. And I said, "No, you know, what's going on?" And she said, "Well, evidently he was camping and he's been missing since 4 a.m.
Was she there?
She was not there.
She was not there. So she got it secondhand.
She did. When two of the kids started to, I'm going to look back on my phone and see if I can find it for sure. I think that it was.
Woke up at 12.
Not yet. I think that it was Sean, her roommate, Sean was Michael's roommate. I think Sean is the one that was calling to see if Michael went to Natalie's.
Okay.
Because some of his friends were still thinking that he had gotten a ride back into town, which he hadn't.
Right.
But they were still checking everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Ben, the guy that took him, mm-hmm. was in sleeping. He went to sleep around 11:30 or 12. And Michael wasn't ready to go to bed yet, so he got out of the bus that Ben and him were in and went to the other bus. And that's when this whole incident mm-hmm. supposedly happened. And they did not wake Ben up until noon to tell him that Michael was missing. And so when he woke up, he's like, "Well, what the hell? What?" And they're all just kind of laying around doing their own thing. I mean, that's the part that really gets me, is if someone is truly missing, you're going to be beating the bushes, making phone calls, mm-hmm. going crazy, trying to find them.
Right. And honestly, you're not going to, if you truly thought that Michael caught a ride into town, why at noon would you change your mind and wake up Ben to say, "Hey, he's missing"?
Exactly. So Ben woke up at noon. He woke up. He looked around a little bit. realized that Michael truly was not there,
mm-hmm.
and he came into town, and that's when he started reaching out to, like Tina was saying, Michael's roommate Sean and a bunch of other people. You know, hey, Michael isn't at camp. Maybe he got a ride. Blah blah blah. And they couldn't figure anything out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he called Natalie. And then I think, did Ben call you also, or is it just Natalie?
I think Natalie texted me. She sent me a message on Instant Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked for Ben's phone number to try and get in touch with him. And then I didn't have Sean's phone number, Michael's roommate. So I was trying to text them because I left work and Parrish and I had called my brother and said, listen, you know, Michael's missing. And he's like, well, what do you mean Michael's missing? I said, I guess he was camping and he went missing. And, you know, we've got to go up to Hobo Camp and find out what's going on. So we're all heading towards Crestwell and then Cottage Grove.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, I'm trying to make a, you know, missing person report.
Right.
You know, and they're like, well, when was he last seen? Who was with him? What was he wearing? I had no idea.
No clue.
Right.
So,
But they let you file a missing persons report that night, right?
They actually took the missing report. They took that report from me at about 6:30, I believe.
What about from Ben, though? Because Ben called
Search and Rescue,
and stated that Michael was missing since 4 in the morning. So Search and Rescue, when we got out there after Tina called, she made their missing persons report on our way up there.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have anything to give them, really, because we said we'd have to call back and give you more information.
Right.
So anyway, when we got back up there, or when we got there, it was about 7:15, and Search and Rescue, they were already there.
Okay.
And they were, you know, calling or not calling, but they had a circle of the kids, not everybody, but they had about 10 kids around him, mm-hmm. and he was asking them, you know, what happened, where'd they go? Blah, blah, blah. And
did you recognize any of those people?
Like,
had you known any of them prior to this?
The only one that I had met was, I think I'd met Ben one time before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only one that I knew. But right. I don't know him, you know, like, really good.
Right, you just had heard of him.
Right, that's the only one that we knew of.
Okay.
Michael knew probably four or five of, you know, on a, I'm not going to say intimate level, but he knew four or five pretty good, like for over a year.
Okay.
And then a few of the others, he really didn't. I mean, it was just like just recently.
Sure.
Yeah, these people that he was camping with, that was not Michael's core group of friends that he normally hung around.
No. Right.
Ben was his friend. Ben, he got a ride from Ben, but looking on Michael's phone, the plan was for Michael to actually get a ride with the twins that have the bus. That was originally the plan, but Michael had a doctor's appointment Monday night at 6:30. He's had a really bad shoulder injury, and they were still trying to figure out what was wrong with his shoulder. So he had to go to that at 6:30, and then I think they wanted to leave prior to that. So that's how Michael ended up
with Ben.
Catching a ride with Ben.
Going back to the search and rescue, when they were there at 7:15, we pulled in. Well, they might have been there at 7. But anyway, we got there probably 15, 20 minutes after he did.
Okay.
And he was basically just gathering names and phone numbers.
Sure.
And I interrupted him and I said, I'm sorry. I said, but, you know, I said, I need to say something. I said, I'm Michael's dad. I know Michael, you know, like I said, I know he drinks. I know he does marijuana. I know he does Molly and ecstasy. What else is here?
Yeah.
And they all just kind of stonewalled me at that time. So I said, I need to know where to start searching. If he was on some, let's say he was on K or ketamine, that's a downer. That's something that makes you totally relaxed, makes you feel drunk.
Okay.
So he's going to stagger 10 feet off the road and probably fall in a ditch.
Yeah. He's not okay. Hiking through the forest.
Exactly.
Got it.
Now, if he was on something, a white drug or a whole bunch of Molly or acid or whatever else they had up there, maybe he could have walked to freaking Portland.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm asking him, I'm like, you know, you got to be honest with me. So we, nope, that's all we did. So anyway, I took Tina home and we went back and stayed in the cars at the camp. When we woke up Thursday morning, a third of the campers were packing up and leaving.
Did you happen to take note which campers those were?
No.
Okay.
No, because, I mean, honestly, Amanda, we thought we were only going to be there a day or two and find Mike around.
Exactly.
You know, we had no idea.
We didn't even have pins or...
No, we had nothing. One bus left...
the next day, Thursday.
Thursday by about 1 o'clock. Between 12 and 1, that bus pulled out.
Was it
and
the,
that's the bus that had the little bus. And that's the little one that bus. Had all the equipment on it.
Right.
Like the stage and the lights and the sound stuff. So they packed all that stuff up and had it in the bus and they were gone.
Okay.
Then by Thursday afternoon, a few more left. And by Friday afternoon, everybody was gone.
And that was not the original plan, right? They were supposed to be there.
As far as I know, the party was supposed to last 4 or 5 days. Well, Thursday morning, search and rescue were up there with a team. And they started at one end above Hobo Camp. And we started, they started at Cedar Creek Campground.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming towards Hobo because we were told Michael walked away from camp. So they went down there and they were working their way back. We went above Hobo and we met them, in between.
Okay.
And then Friday, let me go back. Thursday, we probably had... probably 60 volunteers total.
Wow.
And by the time this got out on Facebook and what was going on and the severity of being out in these conditions, we had on Friday, we started searching from the covered bridge down by Dorena Lake. We started there and worked all the way back up to Cedar Campground on Friday because we had over 200 volunteers.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that doesn't include search and rescue.
Right.
And every day after that, we had between 100 and 150 people every day.
That seriously has been, probably the only positive thing that I can think of in this entire situation is it's been absolutely incredible to watch this take off. And seems like you guys have had just amazing amount of people pouring out. How can I help? Can I do flyers?
Exactly. But after 19 days of searching up there and banging our, literally, I felt like we were banging our heads against the freaking trees and walls
kidding.
And tires because we're not finding a crock, a shirt, a hat, nothing. The dogs aren't picking up any scent. I mean,
drones, helicopters.
We had drones, we had helicopters, we had people on foot, we had people in the water, we had people on horseback. I mean, everything. For, like I said, 19 days.
That's so long.
We finally said enough's enough. We need to start our search in town, cyber searching.
Right.
And as weather and time permits or tips, we will go back up.
Right, exactly. So then, just based on those 19 days, if you had to say, do you think that he's anywhere in that 20-mile radius of that campground? If you had to just take a wild, not a wild guess, but just based off what you guys have found, is that your gut feeling that he's anywhere in that 20 miles?
Amanda, honestly, he could be.
He could be.
And the only reason I say that is because even though we feel that we thoroughly searched the area,
there's tunnels everywhere.
There's tunnels, there's holes, there's caves. Even being 5 feet apart while you're searching, you could step right over something and not see it. And a perfect example of that is my uncle, who's 70-plus years old, was out with the search crew, and he's standing next to a young man, and they were going through the bushes, basically, and this young man walked right over a croc. And it wasn't a white croc, but it was a croc. And he walked right over it. My uncle looked at it, he goes, "Stop." And he's like, "What?" And he goes, "Look right there." And he goes, "What?" And he goes, "You just walked right over a croc."
Oh, my gosh.
So that's the terrain there, like I said, is so...
Yeah, that's rough. At that time of year, too, with all the foliage and everything, kind of in the highest point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So, we can't rule it out for sure.
Exactly. We can't rule it out, but I think his body was moved.
Okay.
I don't feel that Michael walked anywhere other than maybe 15, 20 feet from the bus.
Right.
Because they can't tell me the way the bus was parked, Amanda, and... It was a full moon.
People were still partying on the
They were still on. There was people awake.
Mm-hmm.
We know that because we interviewed the three DJs that were there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not we. The PI did. And they basically said that we were there 24-7 for 3 days or 2 days, 3 days, whatever, Wednesday or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday afternoon, and they didn't see anything. They didn't see people with flashlights, bullhorns, walking around, nothing. And they didn't, the PI did not bait these guys.
Right.
He just said, you know, you did this, you did that, you know, how'd it go, you know. And then when they were all done with their statement, he said, well, did you hear somebody went missing from camp? And they're like, no. And he's like, yeah, someone went missing from camp, you know, supposedly 4 o'clock Wednesday in the morning. And they said that they were running around with bullhorns and flashlights looking for him. And all three of them said, no, we would have seen that or heard that.
Definitely.
Being up on stage.
Right. That would cause a huge commotion, especially at that time.
Yeah.
So who are the people who are saying that they were searching for him with flashlights?
That would be the twins, Ashley, Cody, and both Jonas. Those are the only people that have came forward and talked to us at least twice. And they've talked to the PI, and they've talked to the detective.
It has come to my attention in many different ways that people who were at the party that Michael disappeared from are being harassed. This harassment has come in many forms, such as tagging in Facebook posts and making passive-aggressive comments, egging people's houses and cars, nasty notes, and even death threats. This has to stop. Anyone who's harassing someone who may or may not know anything about Michael's disappearance is hindering this case. I know we're all frustrated and angry, but I think it's really important to remember that we're all here to help.
There's two gentlemen that aren't on any of the lists that we got that were definitely there because we've had people tell us they were there. And that's where I was coming into the muscle, if you will.
Right.
If Michael owed somebody money or did something or whatever, I don't know. Or if he was stepping on someone's toes. But one of them, I mean, he is just, I mean, there's no other word to describe him other than he's just he's pathological, a sociopath, and he's evil.
Okay. For those of you that don't follow the Let's Find Michael Bryson Facebook page, you should. It's become a hub of information surrounding this case, including the infamous list. Last month, Tina posted a list of 33 names. This is 33 people that they know for a fact were at the party that Michael disappeared from. How exactly did you put that list together? Was that just your own personal research?
No. That was a list from one of the kids that was there, sat down and wrote the list out for us.
That's what we need. We need more people doing that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what I kind of want to get to the bottom of, is like, how are all these people connected? And what's their little... What's that?
His roommate, Sean, we have heard, has felt really guilty. He tried to talk Michael out of going to this camp out. And Natalie, I mean, even though Natalie is Michael's ex-girlfriend, you know, in the last 2 months before Michael went missing, all of his friends were trying to get him to slow down.
Okay, so he kind of is even breaking off from his other group that's... And I've heard a lot of different stories, too, about that area and how people seek it out for that specific reason. It's isolated, and people don't go there for, you know, quiet little camping trips. You go there for this reason. It's kind of a known thing.
I had no idea about... I didn't even know this area existed.
Sure.
I mean, I knew Dorena Lake existed because when I was in high school, that's where my boyfriend's family had taken me to teach me how to water ski.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love the lake.
I did not know there was anything beyond that lake, and I did not know there was anything... I didn't realize there's meth labs up there. People go missing all the time. There's a lot of crime up there, and
a lot of enforcement.
The first night, Parrish and I had stayed up there by ourselves. Parrish was so tired, and his back and legs were hurting from searching. So I gave him 2 Tylenol, and he fell asleep, just boom.
Yeah.
And then I'm wide awake, and I'm crying, and my head's going crazy, thinking, oh, you know, all these areas of what could have happened with Michael, you know?
Yeah.
And all I could think of was, oh my gosh,
there's a gun in here, but I don't know how to use it. So somebody
please don't make me learn.
Motorhome, I'm a goner.
Oh my gosh. Oh, but, man.
Yeah, I had no idea about the area.
Sure.
Searching for him.
And that's why they chose that area, Amanda, was that
right.
The cops don't go up there.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence.
You know, and actually the Forest Service, he did leave, or not leave, he did come by on Monday night and told them that there had been a complaint about the music, and if they didn't turn the music down, he was going to compensate all their, he was going to come back with reinforcements and confiscate all their equipment.
Oh, okay.
So they turned it down, and he left, and then it went right back up. You know, and because, I mean, and I don't fault him, because after being up there and being in that vicinity for as long as we were, mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to be up there by myself, even with a gun.
Right.
No freaking way.
That's crazy.
So, again, you know, I don't fault the guy for
right. not getting protecting himself.
Aggressive with him, but, you know.
I wish he had.
I wish he had.
Yeah, totally. So I guess we're at the point now where, I mean, you guys have turned to this virtual search, and I know you have a PI that's on the case, and do you feel like that's going anywhere? Is that how's that experience been so far?
I mean, honestly, Amanda, we have had nothing concrete coming from anybody, whether sure. it be the detective. Well, the detective can't really tell us much because it's an open case.
Okay.
So we were told that from the very beginning because, you know, Tina's brother, Trent, is a police officer. He's like, do not expect to get a lot of information from the detective because they can't comment on it because it's an open case.
Okay.
So in that aspect, you know, like I said, we've been very, it's been frustrating because we just don't know what's happening.
And that's, yeah, that sounds like the part that would make you want to ram your head against a wall is just the uncertainty.
Exactly. When we took the statements, when the PI took the statements, when we asked the kids what happened, and when the detective asked everybody what happened, there were these six main kids gave the same exact story. No one else has answered the people back. These six kids gave them the same exact story, almost verbatim. That's a major red flag. He says, yeah. You don't get five or six people telling you the same exact story.
Witnesses are just known to be unreliable anyways. You kind of just take everything exactly. they say with a grain of salt.
And then, you go to these places, there's no cell service, right?
Right.
So 90% of them aren't going to have their cell phone with them.
Right.
You know, because they have no cell service. It's kind of an unwritten rule, if you will, at these renegades out in the woods, not a rave per se, but the renegades out in the woods, you don't take pictures because they run around naked and doing whatever.
Okay. You know? It's a little, it's a hush-hush, and that's just kind
exactly.
of a known.
It's not like a rave that's been published, like at the Wow Hall or whatever.
Sure.
You know, those kind of things. So no one has their phones, right? And if you look at, I would say, probably 70% of today's youth, and I say that meaning, you know, teenage to 30, mm-hmm. they don't wear watches. So how is it that all six of these people know that Michael left at 4 o'clock.
Right, but nothing more.
Yeah, that's... and with a full moon, how can they not tell me that he got off the bus and he walked right, left, or across the street to the other camp?
I kind of wanted to put it out there to this group, though, that I know you're scared to talk to people, but if you truly didn't have anything to do with Michael's disappearance, this could actually help, like, let me help you get off this list.
There you go.
Because that is the goal, is to cross people off one at a time until we're left with the people who are responsible.
Yep.
So, and if there are no people responsible on that list, then that will tell us we need a new list.
Exactly.
Is there anybody he's ever been in a fight with before?
Okay, so Michael's not a fighter. But I'm not going to say he hasn't fought before.
Okay.
I know of at least probably three fights that I know of. One was he was defending a friend who got hit in the head with a fifth of whiskey. And I did hear that from one of his buddies that, yeah, you know, Michael can get pretty, you know, sideways if something happens and he doesn't like it.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, did you ever see him, you know, go after anybody? Well, no, not really, but
more verbal.
Yeah, probably not the first to throw a punch, but would definitely defend himself if something happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this thing with Ashley, she, Michael was kind of hitting on her.
Okay.
In the bus. And then Tuesday night-ish, whatever, morning, Wednesday morning, evidently Michael was, you know, kind of coming on to her. And this is straight from Ashley's mouth, by the way.
Okay.
And she told us that she told Michael, you know, hey, I've got a boyfriend with a child, and we're trying to work things out, blah, blah, blah. And when she told him that, he backed off. And she told Tina, she goes, I just want you to know that you raised a perfect gentleman.
Aw. Okay.
Now, with that being said, if Michael was to see something, whether it be on the dance floor or if someone was being just disrespectful to a woman, he's going to be the first to pop off about it.
Okay.
And say, you know, hey, what the hell are you doing? You don't treat people like that, especially women.
Yeah,
you know,
knock it off.
The hell off.
Yep.
You know? And...
And just before I forget, you said early on that Sean tried to talk Michael out of going to this party. Why?
Yes.
Why?
Because he didn't really know the people that were throwing the party.
They were trying to slow his party down.
And they were trying to just basically, it's right there, Tina. They're just basically trying to slow Michael's partying down. You know, it's like, hey, you know, do you really want to go out there and rave for 2.5-3 days?
Yeah.
Knowing that Michael was going to another one on Friday. And, the other guy, I don't know if Tina told you this because I was outside for a while, but Michael was invited to go up on stage and do a set Monday night. Or was it Tuesday night?
No, him and Ben played Monday night together.
Yeah, Monday night, him and Ben did a set together.
He didn't do a set Tuesday.
And then, because the DJ remembered that. He told him, he says, oh, yeah, he says, they came up and did a set with us for, you know, a half hour or an hour or whatever that they do. And
so that wasn't necessarily the plan to begin with, was that he was going to DJ, but it just kind of was like a impromptu, like, hey, why don't you come up and do a set? And we'll,
cause actually, Ben was invited, evidently, to do a set, because I asked Ben about it. And Michael had his thumb drive with him, so that makes me think that actually I do know, because I saw on Michael's phone that Josie invited him to the birthday party, and she said that she's looking for DJs, and would he be willing to spin, I think they call it, or
right,
whatever
for an hour or two
terminology.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that Michael and Ben were planning on playing for her party.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because there's some controversy there, whether he was invited, was he supposed to, was this like a paid gig? That kind of clears it up.
I don't think they paid him, but I'm not, I don't know if they paid him or not. I never did.
Well, they probably let him go to the party for free if he was to DJ for an hour or two, because at these quote-unquote renegades, you have to pay like anywhere between $50 and $150 a head to go.
Oh, really?
What they do is they put these things on and put them together, and then they put out their little smorgasbord of drugs, and some of that comes with your, you know, your initial fee, but, you know, after that, you've got to pay extra.
So, yeah, see, this whole culture, I am not familiar with it, and it just keeps getting deeper and deeper.
Oh, I tell you what, Amanda. We have learned more in 7 weeks than we ever thought we would know about this kind of stuff.
Or probably care to, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to do, obviously, is accuse anybody who's not guilty.
And, exactly.
But in my view, at the same time, I kind of think, well, if you're not guilty and your name comes up and you don't like it, or you don't like the version that's out there, why don't you call me and tell me what really happened? And we can just get that all tied up. So I'm kind of like on the fence there. I want to be, you know, classy and sensitive, but I don't want to leave out any huge parts, because I think that somebody out there knows and they have the key to opening this whole thing.
Well, and that's the whole thing, Amanda, is if one thing that everyone keeps bringing up is, oh, Michael's fine. He's running from whatever, and he doesn't want to be found, and you guys just need to leave it alone. And, well, here's the deal. When Michael was in his worst of worst, Michael still reached out to Mom and Dad every 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
He would either send a message via text if he had his phone, or he would send a message via the on the computer, like Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
He would borrow someone else's phone. Hey, this is Michael. I love you. Hmm. Whatever. That's and we so never went more than 3 days, honestly, not hearing from him. Never.
So Mom, that's very telling.
Oh, yeah. Mom, love you. Dad, I need $20.
Sure. I mean, that sounds right.
You know?
Oh, and man.
So, you know, when people say, oh, you know, he just doesn't want to be found, there's only one thing that's going to keep Michael. There's only one thing that's going to keep Michael from reaching out to Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, actually, two. There's the two things are, he got spun out so much on acid that he's in a different state of psychosis.
Right.
And he doesn't even know who he is.
Right.
Okay. But if he was spotted by anybody, even if he was walking around, you know, talking to the birds, someone would have spotted him by
right.
now.
You wouldn't have your mind to even hide at that point if you're that spun out.
Right. So then the other version is he's not with us.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I wake up every morning and I pray two things. I pray this nightmare is over, and I pray that Michael walks in the door.
Of course.
I pray for both those miracles.
I do too. I absolutely do.
I have to drink my first cup of coffee, and I have to step into reality, and I have to realize that Michael isn't here. And how do we get through today without Michael here?
My hope is that anyone who was at the party Michael disappeared from will be inspired by the Brysons' transparency and come forward with any information that may be pertinent to Michael's disappearance. Next time, on Nowhere to be Found.
Who invited you to this party?
Yeah, I was actually roommates with the birthday girl. Yeah, the forest rangers came out that second day.
If you had to guess right now, like, what do you think happened to Michael?
We've been asked how our listeners can contribute to the show, so we set up an account with Patreon. Check out the link in our show notes if you're interested in supporting our cause. You can also find it on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com.